Part 14, A Whirlwind. Meanwhile, news of Custer's attack on the Cheyenne end of the village ran like a whirlwind through the Sioux and Cheyenne warriors who were by then besieging Reno in the bluffs across the river, between 2 and 3 miles away. Large numbers of them, including warriors commanded by Sioux war chiefs Sitting Bull, Crow King, Gall, and Runs the Enemy, hastily turned to confront Custer's men, who were by then retreating from the Cheyenne along the ridge above the river, while Sioux war chief Crazy Horse rode with a joint Sioux and Cheyenne force to flank the Americans, repeating his devastating flanking move against Reno, which broke the Americans' line in the timber and began the killing rout in the Reno fight only a few minutes before. A vengeful Gaul, who led a strong contingent of Hunk Papa Sioux, recalled in 1886, the Indians were in coulees behind and in front of Custer as he moved up the ridge to take position and were just as many as the grass. Reporting of the quick afternoon sortie led by Captain Thomas Weir of Reno's Company M to try to discover what happened to Custer, 7th Cavalry survivor Edward Pigford said, "The appearance of Indians coming from Custer Ridge towards Weir Hills looked as thick as grasshoppers in a harvest field." The Helena Daily Herald wrote, "Curley says the firing was more rapid than anything he had ever conceived of, being a continuous roll, like, as he expressed it, the snapping of threads in the tearing of a blanket." Peter Thompson also described the incredible din as the battle ignited to full fury and the Sioux and Cheyenne squaws began wailing for loved ones lost. The noise gradually became louder and louder until it became indescribable and almost unbearable to the ears of civilized persons, recalled Thompson. Among the free Sioux, many spoke of the battle clamor, too. Blackfoot Sioux war chief Kill Eagle said the noise of the battle was simply terrific, and at its height, Minneconjou Sioux warrior Standing Bear said the sounds of the gunshots, Curley's snapping of the threads and the tearing of a blanket, all merged into one unified, all-consuming roar. "There were so many guns going off that I couldn't hear them," remembered Standing Bear. In the early going, many of Custer's men fought coolly and courageously until they were overwhelmed and killed. Gall, who was an eyewitness to the action on Calhoun Ridge, said Lieutenant James Calhoun's men died fighting as skirmishers, while Keogh rallied his company, which was all killed in a bunch. The corpses of Captain Miles Keogh and nearly 40 of his men were found in a heap after the battle. White Cowbull remembered, "It was a day of bravery, even for our soldier enemies, who fought well and died in courage," while Cheyenne warrior Soldier Wolf recalled, "Custer's men fought well and bravely," and even Sioux war chief Sitting Bull said of the hated American invaders, "They were brave men." However, many Sioux and Cheyenne warriors also described the 7th Cavalry troopers they faced as cowardly, drunk, and confused, or what Sioux warriors Lights and Hollow Hornbear termed demoralized. And Sitting Bull, when he was done making statesmanlike pronouncements, compared Custer's soldiers to quaking aspen, saying with typically deadpan Indian wit, "These were the long-haired soldiers." The eyewitness record also clearly demonstrates another aspect of the battle that Americans have preferred to ignore for over a century: the fact that many of the American soldiers at the Little Bighorn committed suicide. In addition to the curious suicide of the lone American who could be Custer on the fast horse at the end, described by He Dog, White Cowbull, Wooden Leg, and Foolish Elk, group suicides by American soldiers were described by the Sioux and the Cheyenne, including Wooden Leg, Turning Hawk, Turtle Rib, Kate Big Head, Black Wolf, Pine, Limpy, Bobtail Horse, Rising Sun, Red Fox, and Diving Backward. Rain in the Face said other American soldiers got on their knees and begged, in vain for their lives, recalling eyewitness Henry Lemley's tale of how an American soldier handed his gun to the nearest Sioux warrior at the Battle of the Rosebud and was promptly killed with it. This breakdown of command and tactical cohesion among the Americans further demonstrates that Custer was no longer animating his men to determined resistance, as Curley put it. The desperate men in Custer's rudderless command may have spent that last hour of their lives waiting for steely Frederick Benteen, whom Custer had summoned in his last order, or they may have simply had no idea what to do with the mortal mess that Custer had gotten them into. Either way, Benteen was never coming. While responding to Custer's last order, Benteen had run into Reno's badly mauled troops and stopped to provide them the support Custer had promised, but never delivered to the point men on the American attack. Describing how he found Reno, Benteen wrote to his wife 10 days after the battle, "I saw an immense number of Indians on the plain, mounted, of course, and charging down on some dismounted men of Reno's command. The balance of Reno's command were mounted and flying for dear life to the bluffs on the same side of the river that I was. I then marched my 3 companies down to them, and a more delighted lot of folks you never saw." White Man Runs Him believed that Benteen saved the lives of Reno and his men. If those soldiers, Reno's men, hadn't turned back and been reinforced by the pack train, they would have all been killed. The Sioux were coming up fast. However, by the time Benteen and Reno secured their defense and sent out a sortie to look for Custer, it was too late for the 212 men in Custer's command. So instead of Benteen, Custer's men got Lame White Man and Brave Bear and Yellow Nose and Two Moon and Wooden Leg and Gall and Crow King and Rain in the Face and Red Horse and American Horse and Moving Robe and Low Dog and He Dog and Hump and Charging Hawk and Little Hawk and Flying Hawk and Waterman and Short Bull and Lazy White Bull and One Bull and White Cow Bull and the greatest of the 19th century Native American Mujahideen, Sitting Bull and Crazy Horse, all with splendid Indian command and no help at all from the prostrate form of George A. Custer, which his men carried with them like a proverbial dead weight until nearly the end.